So we're going to read from Proverbs. Darwin mentioned that I'm going to be talking about it being Mothering Sunday or Mother's Day. And there's this lovely passage right at the end of the book of Proverbs describing the character of a woman who is a mum. She's also a wife. It's entitled The Wife of Noble Character. So I'm reading from verse 10, Proverbs chapter 31. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships, bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it's still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with dignity and strength. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. There seems to have been quite a lot happening recently that's focused our attention on women. Last week was the International Women's Day. And there were quite a lot of pictures in the newspapers of marches in various places. So an interesting photograph of Annie Lennox standing with three great-granddaughters of Emily Pankhurst, the suffragette. That was quite a significant photograph. And they'd been marching together. And it's a long time since Emily Pankhurst was doing her stuff. That was last Sunday. And 2 days before that was the Women's World Day of Prayer on the Friday. I didn't go to that, although we were invited, we men, but I never seemed to pluck up the courage to go to a Women's World Day of Prayer service. But my wife said it was good. And today's Mother's Day, Mothering Sunday. So we've got to think about women. We've all had mothers, I expect. Some of them have died, like mine. She died 13 years ago. She was 81. Quite a few of us oldies, our mothers have died already. But some of you have got mothers who are still alive. So I hope you've sent them a card or flowers or something, or at least phoned them up to tell them that you love them. My wife was touched earlier this afternoon to get a text message from one of our sons, Mike. He said, "Mum, I love you a lot." And she was quite touched by that. He doesn't often talk like that. Mums, we've all had them. We all owe our lives to the women who gave us birth. We don't live in Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. That's off the cover of the book. You've probably read Aldous Huxley's book about a dystopia where people are not born from human mothers. They're hatched out from containers like that, and they're carefully programmed until they're ready for an independent existence, when the lid can be taken off and they can be taken out and they can start crawling around. And although he wrote it a long, long time ago, it was very prophetic, wasn't it, Aldous Huxley's book, because we seem to be moving in that direction where we think we can design babies and we can mess about with the genes. In fact, I read in yesterday's newspaper, I don't know what newspaper you'd get, but I like this one and it's cheap. Dawn of Designer Human Eggs, Breakthrough Ignites Controversy Over Prospect of Designer Babies. Scientists modify human egg cells using new technique. Gene editing could eliminate inherited diseases from affected families. Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? But you've got to be a bit suspicious, haven't you, about where it's all going, if the scientists think they can make human beings the way they want them to be. Much better the old-fashioned system, I think, of being born. We owe a lot to the mothers who bore us, so it seems like a good time for us to think about the place of women in the world. So let's look at this passage in the book of Proverbs. The wife of noble character is the title. And he says, the writer says, she is worth far more than rubies. Well, that's the kind of thing you could get on a Valentine's Day card, isn't it? You would write to your wife, oh, you're worth far more than rubies. Obviously, this writer really values his own wife. He's not just writing this in abstract, but he's got a wife that he can say these things about. Verse 11, her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. I like that verse because it describes an impressive partnership between the man and his wife. Whatever tasks the wife does, the husband's saying here, he can rely on her to do a good job. And she's bringing credit to the family and to him. Verse 13. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. This is not just a domestic goddess, this woman. She's not just good at housework. She's a trader. She has interests abroad. She's a merchant, and she brings income into the family. When I read that, it reminds me of that person in the New Testament, the person that Paul and his friends came across when they crossed over the Aegean Sea to Philippi, and they looked for people who were already God-fearers. There wasn't a synagogue there, so evidently there weren't enough Jewish people for a synagogue, but they found some women worshipping God on the bank of the river, and one of them was Lydia, and she listened to their preaching, she listened to them telling her about Jesus. I don't know if she'd ever heard about Jesus before, but she believed what they had to say, and she said, well, I'm ready to be baptized, and there was a river there, so she's probably baptized straight away in the river. And it says she welcomed them into her home and she provided hospitality for them. And she was a trader in purple cloth, which was quite an expensive thing in those days. And it needed to be imported. And she brought it over from Thyatira, from the other side of the Aegean. And so she was a woman of some nobility, if you like, some credibility, some ability. She was somebody to be respected. And she was already a God-fearer before Paul ever got there. She was worshipping with a group of friends who were God-fearers. But then when they accepted Jesus into their lives, it made all the difference. And she became a founder member of the Christian church in that city. And she's quite a significant convert, really, because as far as we know, she was the first European to become a Christian. Because they wouldn't have noticed that in those days, because they didn't have that barrier between Europe and Asia that we do. But from our point of view, it looks significant because the apostles had crossed over the Aegean to Greece from what we call Turkey. So that's Lydia. And this description of this woman reminds me of Lydia. Verse 15, she gets up while it's still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She's a hard-working businesswoman, isn't she? I suppose we'd call her middle class because she's got servants to order around to do some of the work for her. She's earned her wealth. She works all the hours God sends, it says here. She doesn't go to bed straight away as soon as it gets dark. I suppose you'd say nowadays she's good at multitasking. My wife tells me that women are better at multitasking than men are. And I guess that's true, really. We tend to concentrate on one thing at once, don't we? But they can do all sorts of things, can't they, these women? And she's like that. Next slide shows us what a spindle and a distaff are, because I didn't know, so I had to look it up on the internet. There we are, that's what they are, a spindle and a distaff. But I couldn't tell you how they work, so you'll have to work it out. It looks like the thread goes down that way and gets wrapped around there, or does it go the other way? I don't know. Downwards? Does it? Okay. Ah. Thus spake the craftsman. Yes. Thank you, Andrew. Yes. Verse 20. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed with fine linen and purple. It's noticeable there in that paragraph that she is not just concerned about her own family. That's quite significant. She's also generous to the poor. She looks out, she sees the needy, and she cares for them too. There are people who are very generous to their own families. They look after their own, but that's as far as it goes. They're not going to show any generosity to anyone else. You sometimes come across people when you're doing Christian aid envelopes distribution, and you knock on the door, and they say, "No, no, we're not giving to that. No, no, we need it. Charity begins at home, you know. We've only just got enough money to look after ourselves. We don't want to be giving money to anybody else." And obviously, from a Christian point of view, that's a completely wrong attitude. I know we do have politicians who say in Parliament, we shouldn't be giving 0.7% of our GDP abroad in aid and development. That's ridiculous. We've got our own needs. But I'm glad and I'm proud, really, that we've got a government that stood firm and said, no, we've committed ourselves to 0.7% and we're going to stick to it. And that's not going to change in the budget. Even if we have to trim other things, We're not going to trim that. We do need to look after the needy. And this woman cares for others, just as the law told her to. Love your neighbour as yourself. And that doesn't just mean your next door neighbour, as Jesus pointed out. It could mean anybody who has any need. Let's look at verse 23. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. Well, he must be an important man, I suppose. Perhaps he's a magistrate or something in the city. The city gate was the place of judgment, where people would take a case for trial and a hearing, and a decision would be made. And this man can take his seat secure in the confidence that he can come home to a well-run house where there will be a harmonious atmosphere and he will feel comfortable and at home. Verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. She's not just a good practical person. She speaks words of wisdom. She can help people. She can give them faithful instruction. She's an all-round respected woman. Verse 28. Her children arise and call her blessed. Just like the children do on Mothering Sunday. They get up and give their mum a flower or something. And her husband also, he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. That would be another good thing to put on a Valentine's Day card, wouldn't it? Many women have done well, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. So a husband and children are full of admiration for her, but also so are the people in the community at the city gate. She has a good reputation. And did you notice something in that paragraph that hadn't been mentioned before? This is a woman who fears the Lord. And that would make all the difference, wouldn't it, to her character and her effectiveness as she reaches out with God's love to other people. Now, that's all very nice, but I thought, just to provoke our thoughts a little bit about what we think about women folk, the Bible says some other things about women which are not quite so nice, not quite so welcome. So I thought we'd have a look at that. So may we look at the passage from 1 Timothy. A woman should learn in quietness and full submission. I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man. She must be silent. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not the one deceived. It was the woman who was deceived and became a sinner. Now then, that's obviously the kind of passage in the Bible which, at the moment, has led some of our Anglican brothers and sisters to resist the very idea that a woman can be a bishop, that a woman can be a leader. We've got a photograph on the next slide of Bishop Libby, who's just started work. And there was such a controversy, wasn't there, over her appointment. Well, over the appointment of bishops in general. It's more than 20 years since the Anglican Church decided to appoint women priests, but it took them another 20 years to decide that they could appoint women bishops. And of course, the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox churches, the Greek Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox, etc., they haven't even started thinking about ordaining women. So you could say the majority of Christians in the world would not consider ordaining a woman into Christian leadership. And our Church of England has only just managed to decide to do so, being dragged kicking and screaming. Where do we stand on this issue? Do we believe in equality for women? Or do we believe that there are some roles for which women are not suited? I had an interesting conversation on Thursday morning in our village hall. We had a talk from somebody in the RNLI, the Royal National Lifeboat Institution. And he's a very experienced lifeboatman. And he was describing the work they do. And I thought, well, I'm preparing this sermon about women, I think I'll ask this question. I said, how long is it since the RNLI was prepared to appoint women to be part of lifeboat crew? And the answer to that was it was in the 1960s. The RNLI goes back a long way before that. So they've been dragged kicking and screaming into the modern world. He said about 10% of crews are women now. So that means sometimes they'll go out with a crew with a woman, sometimes they won't. Most people these days believe in equality for women, but it hasn't always been so. And we talked about Emily Pankhurst, there she is, earlier on. Back in the 19th century, women in this country did not have the vote. They couldn't vote for MPs. So there was no equality. And there was all sorts of other kinds of inequality as well, property laws about husbands owning the property and that sort of thing. But people started campaigning for equality, and the suffragettes in the end succeeded in getting the vote for women. And during the 20th century, it came to the point where women were equal with men in terms of voting rights. That's a lot of change has taken place in our society over the past century or so. Have Christians kept up with it? Christians have changed their ideas about women in leadership during that period of time, but only some Christians. We probably have a false sense of it being okay because we are in a Baptist church and the preacher this morning was a woman, and that's not unusual in this church. And the Baptist Union of Great Britain has had women ministers for many years. But we are in the minority. So in order to keep in step with changing social norms, Christians have to look again at passages like that one in 1 Timothy and really recognize that that was culturally relative. In other words, it may have been appropriate for Paul to write that in that time, to that community, to that recipient, Timothy. But that doesn't mean it would always be appropriate to say that. And we recognize that that is no longer an appropriate thing to say about women in the church, that they should remain silent, and that they're not allowed ever to teach men. Well, we certainly don't practice that, do we? Because we had Diane preaching this morning. Some Christians feel uncomfortable about handling the Bible like that. Some of you may be feeling uncomfortable now. You may be thinking, hang on, if you start doing that with the Bible, where's it going to stop? And that is a problem. But that doesn't mean it's not the right way to think. It just means you've got to be very careful. There is another passage that I'm going to show you now, which I think we'd all say is culturally relative, that we wouldn't want to apply it nowadays. In Ephesians chapter 6, slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. Obey them not only to win their favor when their eye is on you, but like slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. Serve wholeheartedly, as if you were serving the Lord, not men, because you know that the Lord will reward everyone for whatever good he does, whether he is a slave or free. That was appropriate when it was written. The Roman Empire was full of slaves. It would have collapsed if they'd abolished slavery. And there were probably slaves in every congregation. And whenever a preacher stood up, he would know that he was addressing a room where some were slaves and some were free. And as Christians, they tried to get on with one another. But yet, it was appropriate to say to the slaves, you must obey your masters. Because, well, if you don't, you'll give Christianity a bad name. Because we'll be seen as rabble-rousers if we start telling the slaves not to obey their masters. So for the time, it was appropriate. Unfortunately, when people started thinking about abolishing slavery at the end of the 18th century, Wilberforce and those people, some Christians said, oh no, you can't do that, because it's obvious that God approves of slavery, because otherwise there wouldn't be passages like this in the Bible. So you can't abolish it. It's ordained by God. And people seriously did say that through the end of the 18th and through the 19th century and, well, quite late on in the 19th century in America. Because it's quite difficult to get your head around this idea that some parts of the Bible are culturally relative, that this is culturally relative. And it's not appropriate now. We wouldn't want to say to anybody now, if they happen to have unfortunately got themselves enslaved, and some people nowadays do get enslaved, don't they? People trafficking and that sort of thing. We wouldn't want to say to them, oh, you should obey your masters as unto the Lord. We should say to them, you need to report it to the police and get yourself freed, because we don't believe in slavery now. So we do need to recognize that some passages of the Bible are culturally relative and were appropriate for the time when they're written, but they're not now. Coming back to Mother's Day and the position of women in society and in the church, it seems to me that Proverbs 31, the passage that we started off with, may have been ahead of its time, really. What a wonderful attitude to a woman it portrays, and it wasn't all that typical of some of the other passages that we've looked at. Because it portrays a woman who's an equal partner with her husband and is highly respected by her children and the community.